Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt is here with us. And on the telephone, the authors of a terrific new book called Hockey, A Global History, Stephen Hardy and Andrew C. Holman. Gentlemen, welcome. Steve, to you, welcome back.
Thank you, Rich. Great to be back.
Good to be with you.
Bruce, and I was thinking as I was driving up here that I had one big question to ask you, and that is this. Did you start out to write the most definitive book on the history of hockey, or did this start out as a smaller project which grew into this project?
Well, this is Steve. It started, if you can believe it, in 1991 as what was intended to be a short paperback on hockey with Illinois, and they envisioned a series of small paperbacks, sport by sport. But the problem was they assumed, perhaps, that there was an abundance of good scholarly literature on these various sports. And that worked for baseball, and it worked for the Olympics, but not for hockey. So they, both I and they, realized that this was going to require a lot more digging, a lot more primary source work. And over time, the project got delayed with personal tragedies in my family life. And luckily, Andy Holman came into the scene. I got to know him through some hockey conferences in the early 2000s and asked if he would like to come on board. And luckily for me, he said yes. And once Andy came on board, then we realized between the two of us, we could really expand the book. And I think we probably went overboard. The original manuscript was 1,000 pages, but it's still a pretty big book. But
just to clarify, I really didn't have the opportunity to say no. Steve wouldn't let me say no. but it's been a great pleasure to be along on this ride. And you know, you hear lots of stories about co-authors working with one another and maybe not doing it so smoothly or amicably, but it's been a lot of pleasure right from the start. We seem to have the same kind of thoughts and rhythm of writing and conclusions about the sport. So, it's been a great pleasure.
Now, Andy, did you divide up the workload in a specific way or in specific areas? How did this collaboration work?
Well, we did in some ways. The material that comes from that deals with hockey in Canada, for example, not all of it, but a good measure of it, was something that was given to me. Steve, his expertise is in a great many things, but certainly in the corporate aspects of the game, hockey in Europe, hockey in the United States. It didn't mean that we split up chapters. I think for the most part, we both had a hand in each of the chapters, so our voices are both there all the way through, strewn through. It was just kind of a division that seemed to logically suggest itself. Given my background in Canadian history and Canadian studies, that's principally, I think, where my efforts were located.
Well, as you guys point out in the book, for a long time, all the hockey history literature, or at least almost all of it, was written by white male Canadians. And the story of hockey was being told solely from that perspective. Your ability to really define not only the difference between Canadian, North American hockey and European hockey, but within each of the European communities and the origins is really amazing. I mean, how long did that research alone take you?
Well, I mentioned these conferences that began in 2000 up in Halifax. Colin Howell, a wonderful scholar at St. Mary's University, began a series of conferences. Andy hosted one in Plymouth in 2005, but these conferences brought scholars from around the world, and it quickly became clear that there were people working on terrific histories in European countries, more in the U.S. and Canada. So we were able to gather materials that were coming forth. And so there was certainly enough scholarly literature that had source material we could look at, weigh evidence, and use with proper citations. So we were fortunate. Things began to unfold around the same time we really got to work on this book. And when I say really got to work, that was pretty much after Andy came on board. I think it was 2003. I had done a little work on my own for the U.S., but for the rest of it, it really didn't begin to unfold for us until Andy signed on in 03.
You trace the early history of the game, and Andy, we'll start with you. When did the game of hockey become the game that modern fans would recognize?
Well, we pinpoint the birth, if you want to call it in quotation marks, at in March of 1875, when a group of current and former McGill University students played a game on the Victoria skating rink there. And there probably had been games played there before, but this one was important because it was recorded. It appeared in the next day in the Montreal Gazette in the newspaper, and so the details of who played and what was the nature of the game, and even some reference to a hockey fight having taken place at the end of the first game. I mean, there's definitely a connection to the modern day game. That's the game that we can draw a direct line of heritage to with the modern game. We also know for sure that there were a series of ball and stick games played on the ice and off the ice in many cultures for centuries before that game. But that's the one that we point to, and we can trace its development there in the city of Montreal through the Montreal Winter Carnival in the 1880s, which acted as a kind of leaping-off point, if you want to call it that, for the game to spread across Canada and into the northern United States and eventually into the UK and Europe as well. So, that's, for us, that's ground zero, and that's, I think, what most hockey scholars today would agree with, although there is some controversy there among folks who study the game and love the game in Halifax, Nova Scotia, for example.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, what I think is crucial in this process that Andy was describing is that over this period of 8 or so years, from 75 or 9 years to 86, 11 years, what is it, 9 years, to 86, the folks in this area in Montreal eventually formed the Amateur Hockey Association of Canada, and they had tinkered with rules, going from a number of people on the ice, eventually down to seven, then to the rubber puck, and so forth. And it's this set of rules, the Amateur Hockey Association of Canada, that you can actually trace in the historical record that finds its way around, that people recognize it. These people in the U.S. who want to pick up the game, they ask for the rules of the Amateur Hockey Association of Canada. In some places, they actually call them the Montreal rules. So that's why we're pretty clear to ourselves, and we hope to make it clear in the book that Montreal is really the place where a different version of the game evolved and spread out to become what we think of as hockey today.
And when you look at those early Montreal rules, what is it you think that made them so popular in other parts of the world? Why did the Europeans, for instance, come to those rules as opposed to stubbornly stay with the rules they were playing with?
That's a very good question. I think what happens is the Montreal rules, as they're laid down, are important in two different ways. Number one, the game was exciting, and it was something that traveled well. So individual, we call them evangels in the book, would take that particular game and transplant it in Toronto or Winnipeg or even further west in Canada. It comes into Burlington, Vermont, and into parts of Minnesota through individual people who take those rules and the game and the equipment with which it was played and physically transplant it. But throughout the the book, Steve and I describe the game as really being composed of three essential elements. There is speed, of course, and there is combination play or science of the game. And there is mayhem or violence. And these three elements from that point in time until the present day become the three things that hockey people and non-hockey people identify the Montreal game with. Over the course of the centuries, the decades certainly that this game has been played, those three elements exist in different balances. Certainly in the 1970s, we'll all remember that violence was perhaps more privileged than the other two aspects of the game when you thought about it in the popular consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
but by and large, those are the, you know, it's some sort of combination of those three different elements, and that really is the brand of the Montreal game.
And what is also clear in this period of time is the puck changes the nature of the flow of the game. It's much more controllable than a ball. But interestingly enough, one of the features that appealed to people of the time, making the game more interesting and scientific, was the restriction on forward passing. You would think that the more forward passing, to our way of thinking, the faster the game, the more exciting. But much like rugby and soccer, these folks in Montreal adopted a no forward pass part of the game. And in the minds of those who had been playing alternative versions, which we cover, like polo, which was just smash the ball forward and go for it, the idea of a lateral passing or drop passing, the flow of the game, seemed much more interesting and scientific.
Well, it is an incredible book, and I'm so impressed with the depth and the breadth of it. And I predict, as many other people have, this is going to be the source people are using for years. I wish we could talk all day about this, but I do want to thank both of you for joining us, and I really want to thank you for writing the book. It's something we've needed for a long time.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very
much. Thanks for your support, and we'll be back on another time, we hope.
You bet. Absolutely.
That sounds great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Andrew C. Holman, Stephen Hardy, Hockey, A Global History. I just love those stories of the early days of hockey.
Well, and how St. Paul's school, one small prep school in New England, albeit an elite school, really is in many ways where all of the hockey in America springs from in significant ways, because they became the evangelists. They went to the other places to start hockey. And it's not just Hobie Baker. It's other guys. So, yeah, and it's a fun book. It's so well written. It's really a fun book to read, too.
It's called Hockey, A Global History. On what's up next week on
Next
Sports
week, Life? Tyler Hillard told me that I should read a book called Logan in Overtime by Paul Querington. I did. It's fabulous. We're going to talk about it. It's a great novel.
Excellent. That's coming up next Wednesday, Sports Lit 101.